Can you hear me now?
Hello?
Nick? Nick, are you there?
You're very quiet.
You can't hear me?
Are you there? Oh, yeah, kind of.
You can hear me. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's kind of low, so speak loud.
Okay, let me try calling you back.
All right, yeah, try that out.
This is Dylan.
This is Nick, and you're listening to
Colloquium. Hello and welcome to Colloquium. We're here for a late night podcast here on a Saturday night.
Yeah, indeed. Bringing in the new year.
The new year.
Oh. Brendo, bringing in October 3rd here.
That's right.
Close enough, right?
That's right. We're here on the Feast of the Guardian Angels. Bringing in whatever October 3rd is. I don't know if it's anything significant.
Feast of the Guardian Angels is what it is.
Right now, for the second.
Oh, yeah. The second. Yeah, yeah, today's the second. Sorry,
yeah. Confused, yeah. And then Monday, I think, is St. Francis.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Okay.
The 4th, so. Big things coming up. When this is released, it will most likely be the Feast of St. Francis. So, happy Feast of St. Francis of Assisi to all of you out there in listener land. He is a great saint. Call on his intercession.
Nice, yeah. Yeah, I started getting into the different saint feast days when I started using the Magnificat, like the mm-hmm. monthly, essentially journal that gives you all the daily mass readings and prayers and whatnot. So, it's been cool. It's cool to like get up in the morning and look and see whose feast day it is on that particular day. Yeah,
it's fun stuff. It's just such a beautiful Catholic tradition. Like we always have something to celebrate or somebody to celebrate, you know?
Yeah, there's just a ton of amazing people too that you haven't heard of before. And it's just really cool. It kind of sanctifies the day, you know, when you figure out whose day it is or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it has been 2 weeks since exactly to the day since we've recorded. And I was thinking about this yesterday. Until I saw you last night, I had not seen you at all in that span of 2 weeks.
Tell you what,
so we're basically talking to it. This is kind of rare for listeners, but we're talking to each other more or less for the first time since our last podcast.
Tell you what, I'm glad you're getting to talk to me. That is a
privilege. I am glad I'm getting to talk to you too. It is a pleasure. But I just feel like I don't know you anymore. You know, it's been 2 weeks. I don't know what you've been up to in these last 2 weeks. So I just think, you know, we need to do some catching up, which I think plays into our topic, doesn't it, Nick?
Oh, my. Yeah, so we're going to do it a little bit more informally today, I think. It might end up being more formal, I don't know. But, so just as a reminder for our listeners.
Before going to the topic, we have a reminder. Yeah,
just as a reminder of what we're kind of we're about at Colloquium. Just a reminder, it's to promote or encourage or cultivate just, you know, beautiful and holy and meaningful conversation within your mm-hmm. relationships. We just feel like there's not enough of that goes on. So just, you know, we're trying to, I don't know, kind of create environments or kind of promote environments that can stimulate conversation like that. So we're going to try this out today. We do this every time we podcast, obviously, but in a little bit more of an informal nature. We're going to talk about simply what we've been praying about, reading, contemplating, etc. So it's just an open forum to discuss the things that we would normally discuss.
Yeah, which is what we do and we love doing, and we want to invite you all to do as well.
Yeah, awesome. Should we just dive in or what?
Let's just dive in. Nick, what have you been praying about, man?
Nothing. No. Okay. No. Yes, I have a couple things written down here. But one thing that I do each day is I try to read the daily gospel reading and spend mm-hmm. time reflecting on that in prayer. There's been a couple in the past, well, several obviously, but a couple that have stood out in the past month or so in the month of September that have just really struck me, and they've come up in the past couple years, and I thought I would kind of bring that up and we can discuss it. So this is a passage from The Man with the Withered Hand. It's kind of, I don't want to say, isn't it like an obscure healing, would you
fairly,
say, or what do you think?
Yeah, it comes up in the, I think, Sunday Mass readings from time to time, so it's not all that obscure, but yeah, it's not, you know, it's not the prodigal son or the good Samaritan.
That's right. Yeah, I think it's pretty well known to where someone would say, oh yeah, I know that passage or whatever, but I was coming across it in a, you know, just a daily Mass reading a few weeks ago, a month ago, and it just really struck me again. It struck me several times as I've come across it. So I thought we'd read it and we can talk about it a little bit. So,
all right, great. Mark chapter 3, correct?
Yeah, Mark chapter 3, verses 1 through 6.
Okay.
And it appears in the other synoptic gospels also, in Matthew and Luke, but this one in particular really kind of moves me, so I'll read it. Excuse me. It says, again, Jesus entered the synagogue. There was a man there who had a withered hand. They watched him closely to see if he would cure him on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. He said to the man with the withered hand, come up here before us. Then he said to them, is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath rather than to do evil? To save life rather than to destroy it? But they remained silent, looking around them with anger and grieved at their hardness of heart. He said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately took counsel with the Herodians against him to put him to death. First of all, again, another beautiful healing from Jesus, and you know, a sign of his kind of the healing aspect of his ministry, which was a huge part of it.
Yes, well done on Jesus' part.
That's right. Yeah, good going. Yeah, but the thing that really strikes me about this passage, and that I was considering, was the Pharisees in particular, and how Jesus treats them. So notice, like, Jesus heals this man. Like, he steps up and heals this man's hand. Mm-hmm. Has this, you know, this maimed hand or whatever for, I guess, his life. And completely heals it. And just the Pharisees are totally oblivious to that. They're just totally oblivious to that. And all they're worried about is whether Jesus is going to, you know, break some, you know, whatever law. Right. I love this verse. I don't love it, but you get what I mean. Jesus is talking about Jesus, verse 5, looking around at them with anger and grieved at their hardness of heart. Just the way Jesus, like, approaches these Pharisees, yeah. And like how like grieved he is at the way that they approach this man, like with zero compassion.
Right.
They totally miss it.
Yeah.
You know, I was just,
yeah.
Go ahead. You have thoughts on it?
Yeah. Well, I think two things kind of strike me in this passage. The first is that I love this. I've come to really love the Sabbath healings over the years, because I think especially, you know, we've talked about scrupulosity on this podcast before, but as someone with a history of real struggle with scrupulosity, the Sabbath healings to me are just like just really drive home that point of like, don't be scrupulous. What are you doing? Like, heal. Right? Healing is good, right? Why are you obsessing about these particular details about making sure you do everything just right on the Sabbath, and you're forgetting about doing good? You're forgetting about loving others, right? Because you're so caught up in these rules. And that's exactly what the Pharisees are doing, right? So that strikes me. I just smile when I see these Sabbath healings. One that I've been reflecting on recently too is when the disciples pick grain on the Sabbath.
Yeah.
And Jesus is taking his disciples through the field and they're just picking grain and eating because they're hungry.
Yeah.
And the Pharisees are like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Can't pick grain. They're like, man, we're just eating.
Yeah,
like,
we're just out here eating though.
We're just getting that bread, as the kids say.
They do say that.
The kids do say that. I can attest that. I know that's kids.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, then the second thing that strikes me on that is like you were hitting at, just the Pharisees' response, like the hardness of heart to just completely miss the point here.
Yeah.
And still remain against Jesus because of the kind of attention to legalistic mindset.
Yeah. Yeah, I think just kind of the extent of my prayer there too is like, you know, Jesus, please, please, God, don't make me that way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like I hope that I can, you know, lead with compassion instead of, because, you know, relating it, this is a little bit unrelated, but sort of, is like, you know, when we're approaching someone who is, you know, is in serious sin as a, you know, committed Christian, mm-hmm. like, and who's not living a life of virtue and, you know, whatnot, I think the tendency a lot of times, for me at least, is to like, point fingers or judge or like see them as being, you know, lesser or, you know, ooh, look at you, you know, that kind of a thing, you know? And I think what Jesus calls us to do in most situations is to lead with compassion, to kind of, see the person and lead with compassion and lead with charity. That's exactly what Jesus seems to do, except with the Pharisees, on most occasions. So I just pray that I'm that way and that I don't, my heart doesn't harden, you know, my seeking out evangelization.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. And I just, I'm looking at this passage and I see, you know, our Lord's words, you know, after it says that he looked around them at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart. and then said to the man, stretch out your hand.
Right.
I'm just kind of imagining, like, how did our Lord say that phrase, stretch out your hand?
Yeah.
Like, he has this moment where he grieves the Pharisee's hardness of heart, and then he draws his attention back to the man.
Yeah.
You know, is it like this kind of, like, stretch out your hand, let's do this, like what we came here to do, or what I came here to do. I don't know. That's kind of how I'm reading it, like, in this moment. It's like, all right, stretch out your hand.
Yeah.
Like, let's just get on with this, right? But also in obviously a loving and attentive way, with his attention on that man. And it says he stretched it out, and his hand was restored. And then the passage ends with, you know, it doesn't end with that man and his skipping off, right? This passage is about the Pharisees.
Right.
I'm sure the man skipped off excited, or, you know, something like that, right? But here it's about the Pharisees. The Pharisees went out and immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him.
Yeah.
So despite seeing this act of God, this miracle in front of them, they wanted to destroy him.
Yeah, they totally miss it. I mean, it's kind of inexplicable. It's like, why is this happening? You know, and just trying to relate that to our personal lives, you know, like, in what ways do we do that? I mean, I'm not really sure at the moment, but.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure there are ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Maybe in the Catholic Church too. I think there are issues with just, like, being a little bit too, stringent in terms of the law or whatever,
right.
You know,
yeah.
Whereas that's important, but at the same time, you don't want to leave with that above all else, you know, anyway.
Or, like, yeah, discrediting, you know, good that people are doing.
Right.
Because maybe we disagree with them, or because, you know, different political opinions in the church or whatever it might be. You know, it's all also like the gospel reading from, I think it was a couple Sundays ago, or maybe it was past
maybe
Sunday.
I think it was last Sunday.
This past Sunday, might have been two Sundays ago, but okay. About, if we're talking about the same one at least.
Maybe, go ahead.
But where the disciples are upset because somebody's casting out demons.
Yeah, I think it was last week. I think
it was two.
Okay. No.
It doesn't matter.
Maybe it was a Wednesday in between.
Because I'm thinking about where I was. But anyway, that mass reading was similar, right? Because it's like the disciples, it was last week. You're right.
Ooh, let's go.
Okay. Right. I just thought, because I was thinking about, I went to a different church last Sunday than the one before. Now I'm picturing it. I'm picturing the homily, and it was at St. John's.
Gotcha.
And that's where I was last weekend on my birthday.
Oh, nice.
So the disciples had, the funny thing about it is they had tried to cast out a demon and couldn't.
Right, yeah.
And they're really upset, and Jesus reprimands them for their lack of faith. And then some other guy's casting out demons, and they're like, Lord, should we tell him to stop?
Dude.
And then Jesus is like, well, if you're not for me, you're against me.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he doesn't say that.
I think he says it two different, never mind. But anyway, yeah, that's a confusing one. I think whoever is not against us is for us.
Right, essentially, yeah. Right? So you see good being done. You see good being done in the world, and we antagonize it. Right. I think that's a way that I can see myself prone to do it.
Right? Yeah.
See this good, and I don't want to attribute the good to them or to God even.
That's right.
Because I'm already judging this person's heart.
Yeah. I bet that was a funny scene for the disciples, how, like,
I can only imagine, like, what the heck? This guy doesn't even know, like, he doesn't even follow us, and how can he cast out a demon? That's not fair.
I'm just imagining, like, Jesus reprimanding them and him turning over and going, look, Jim over there is doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. I even think of, like, I guess it's tangential to the reading you brought up, but, like, I mean, another practical application maybe of, like, you know, we see, like, Protestant churches where, like, the Holy Spirit seems to be moving powerfully.
Yeah. Right? That's a great example.
Like, it's like, what the heck? You're not doing it right. Like,
yeah, that's right.
Why do you get the Holy Spirit?
yeah, I'm with you. No, that's a good point. That's a good example. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was one thing that kind of was on my my prayer routine lately.
Awesome. Does that mean it's my turn?
Yeah. You want to just alternate? Let's do that.
Sure. So my first one is actually, I think, something we had in common, unbeknownst. We didn't discuss, but we just happened to both put down on our Google Doc.
Yep.
Poetry.
Yeah.
So I don't know why, but just, I guess, in the last 2 weeks, poetry has just come up on my mind. I've tried to read a little bit of poetry, tried to write, and I think you and I are in the same boat in that we've never been particularly disposed to poetry reading.
Yeah.
But I guess I've just found myself where there have been a couple of poems that I've read. I've remembered. They're ones I've read before and I've revisited. And I've just found a lot of consolation in contemplating them.
Cool.
But I noticed too, yeah, so you put it down. So I want to hear what you have to say on it. And then we also established that this might be why you put it down. But Word on Fire just released their new magazine journal, and it's on poetry.
You're right.
But yeah, what'd you put this one down for?
Yeah, that is why I put it down. I'm a huge follower of the Word on Fire journals. I think they're absolutely incredible. And the latest journal is on poetry. The whole thing is on using poetry and evangelization in our spiritual lives. And I was kind of excited for it because, like Dylan was saying, I have a couple poems that I like, and those, and like they're ones that I can understand.
Yeah.
But outside of that, like, I just have the hardest time sitting down and reading poetry. Sometimes I'll like try to read a famous poem that, and I read it and I'm like, this does not make any sense to me at all. Like, I do not like this. So, anyway, I have a hard time kind of sitting through poetry. A lot of times, not always, but, see, I'm trying to get into it. A lot of people that I really respect, and a lot of holy people, have said that poetry is, really important and for our culture and for our society and for human beings. So I'm trying to get into it because of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm with you in that struggle. I think, I guess the way I think of it, the poetry is a very, it's a mysterious thing.
Yeah.
When we read a poem, we can't put our finger always on why exactly it's true or why exactly it makes sense or what, even sometimes what exactly the point is, right?
Yeah.
Because in some ways we feel it in our hearts before we intuit it in our mind.
Yeah.
And so there's something mysterious about poetry. And I think especially, you know, you think of like the Western kind of mindset of like trying to, you know, dogmatize everything and figure out exactly what everything looks like. I think that that can be a challenge, right? Because it can be kind of a stumbling block, but a good stumbling block.
Yeah.
That slows us down and I think communicates truth in a different, a more mysterious way, which is, I think, why I've been drawn to it lately.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, I'm with you. I've struggled at times to read poetry. I sometimes zone out. I have a hard time understanding
me too.
It at times. But what's happened to me recently, I there's two poems in particular, one of which I just had this line in my head. It's a famous quote from this poem. And I'd never known what poem it's from, but it's the phrase, you might have heard it. "'Tis better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I heard that since I was a kid, never knew where it was from. So I looked up where it was from and I read the poem. It's a long poem, but I read it from start to finish and I really liked it. It's called In Memoriam AHH. It's an interesting title, by Lord Tennyson. And a little bit of the background of the poem, from what I found, it's written about, I think, his like brother-in-law who died, and he had a great affinity for. And so he reflects reflects upon a lot of different just kind of losses he experienced and just the pain of loss in general. That line, "'Tis better to have loved and lost than ever to have loved at all," is the last line of the poem. But I wanted to point out how the poem begins, because I found it quite interesting. So it begins addressing God, really as a prayer. So he says, "Strong Son of God, immortal love, whom we that have not seen thy face, by faith and faith alone embrace, believing where we cannot prove, thine are these orbs of lights and shade, thou madest life in man and brute, thou madest death, and lo, thy foot is on the skull which thou hast made." So he begins with this just kind of grand contemplating life and death, addressing God. And then the majority of the poem is just kind of his reflections on loss in life, and particularly the death of this man who he had a great affinity for.
Mm.
And he concludes the end of the poem is he says, "I hold it true, whate'er befall. I feel it when I sorrow most. 'Tis better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all."
Hmm.
So I just found this to be just an incredibly beautiful poem.
That is beautiful, yeah. Yeah, this is a good example. I love poetry when it's explained to me.
It's fair. Yeah.
Maybe you could stand next to me when I read it and say, oh, yeah, here's what that means. I'm like,
there you go. Maybe we just need poetry tutors.
That's right. I think so. Yeah. You know, that's interesting. I mean, that's funny, but at the same time, it's kind of true. Like, you need, I feel like the poetry is a thing where you need to understand it. So, like, you need to understand what it's for and its basis and kind of the structure of, you know, different types of structures of poetry in order to appreciate it more, just like anything, really. Right. You know, so,
yeah. But I guess to get to like the ultimately what I've been contemplating about that is really just that last line, you know, in the context of like pain and suffering, right? That it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all.
Yeah.
Right? It's this eternal truth that the pain we have of losing somebody, whether it's death, losing something that you love, losing contact with something or someone that you love, that ultimately it's still good, and it's better to have had that experience in all the pain and suffering that it brought you in the end, than to never know love and to never know that good.
Beautiful. That's beautiful.
Yeah, so that was one of them. And then the other poem I really like, The Road Not Taken by
Robert Harris. Yes, the classic.
Very short, but I what struck me in rereading this poem is a lot of times I think people think it's called The Road Less Traveled.
Oh, yeah.
Because he mentions the road less traveled. That's the road he took, right? But the poem's not about forging your own trail and blazing the road less traveled, which I think kind of gets misconstrued to be. It's actually about the road that he didn't take, and about the kind of the way our human choices exclude other things, right? Mm-hmm. So he goes down this one road, which really wasn't all that different from the first road. When you look at the poem, it's short. You can look it up. It's four stanzas. But by going down this road, he can't go back and take the other road. And so just the mystery of human choice and how it shapes the whole future course of our life, the choices that we make. And so just something to ponder, I think, with life decisions that I found it quite fruitful to be reflecting on.
Yeah, it's interesting. You can even think of like our, just each of our days is having a series of, you know, choices of roads that we're going to take, you know, and how those add up over time, you know, just, it's really amazing to think about Jesus' providence in that too, about how, you know, in each and every day we have a series of, you know, choices of which road we're going to take. And, you know, despite us choosing road, you know, this road after that road, Jesus seems to lead us down the path that he had intended in some sense, you know, so. It's kind of cool thinking about the intricacy of God's providence in our lives in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in thinking about reflecting on poetry, have you started reading from the Word on Fire journal?
I have. I've read quite a bit of it.
Able to make any progress in your poetry contemplation?
I have. Yeah. You know, so I've read a little bit. I've read probably 50 pages of the poetry journal, and it's great. I mean, I'm enjoying it. So I have. It's funny because in each of the journals, not just the poetry journal, but each of the journals, they do sometimes put poems in there. I mean, there's been a couple in the journals that I've actually really enjoyed. One in particular was by Walt Whitman, When I Heard the Learned Astronomer. You ever heard that one?
No.
I think I read it on one of our young adult gatherings on Sunday night once. Okay. But yeah, it's an interesting one. I guess I can read it right now. I have it here, and it's very short. It's, you know, it's one that I can understand. Which I think is
sure.
Yeah. Which it makes
it's good for simple-minded folk.
That's right. Yeah, indeed. Like me. And here it goes. When I heard the learned astronomer. When I heard the learned astronomer, when the proofs, the figures were ranged in columns before me, when I was shown the charts and diagrams to add, divide, and measure them, when I, sitting, heard the astronomer where he lectured with much applause in the lecture room, how soon unaccountable I became tired and sick. Still, till rising and gliding out, I wandered off by myself in the mystical moist night air, and from time to time looked up in perfect silence at the stars.
That's beautiful.
It's a beautiful poem. Yeah. Wow. So essentially it's about how, you know, he was in class with it, listening to this astronomer talk about all the theories of astronomy and whatnot. And he just, became tired of that and walked out and, found beauty and enjoyment and knowledge and experiencing the stars outside in the evening.
I love that.
Powerful.
I love that. I absolutely love that. A couple of things strike me about that. So the first being that this is what I've been pondering about poetry is that it's so beautiful and it sounds so simple when we read it. But have you ever tried to write poetry?
I have.
Is it ever any good?
Maybe. I mean, I don't want to throw myself under the bus. I think I've written a couple decent things. Yeah.
Okay. You're probably a better writer. You're also more musical than I am. So I could see that. In my experience, when I've tried to write poetry, it is terrible.
Let's hear some of it.
No, definitely not. But like, it's just this strange thing where like you read it and it's like, that's such a beautiful like use of words and imagery. And I sit down to write it. It's like, that is not a natural, like, it either seems to take a gift or some really like laborious creativity to create a poem like that. You know, because in one sense, he's just writing about, he showed up in an astronomy lecture hall and then looked at the stars, right? The content of that is not a difficult thing to write.
Right, yeah.
But to communicate it in the way, the beautiful way that he did is, I don't think it's an easy task at all.
Yeah, that is. That's a very... it's kind of overwhelming to think about some of the beauty and the genius of some of these poets, you know. It's cool too, because like it seems so free flowing. Actually, Walt Whitman is known as like the father of the free verse, you know, kind of a more loose version of poetry. But like just how much base knowledge one has to have in order to be experts and to be, you know, well written poets. I mean, it's not like it comes out of someone who wasn't a poet last night is a poet in the morning. You know, a lot of times it comes out of practice and knowing the the structure, you know, typical structures of poetry and how to write, you know. So so anyway, more appreciation for that for sure.
Yeah, the other thing that strikes me about that poem in particular is kind of this, like, it's got this balance of like the academic of like learning about astronomy right, in the classroom, and then learning quote unquote about astronomy just by gazing at the stars.
Yeah.
Right. And how necessary both are.
I think with preference for the experiencing it, though, you know.
I think that's right. Yeah. Right. Just like the idea of like theology begins on your knees, right?
Yeah.
As someone who studies theology, right, I think it's a beautiful reminder that as much as you read in books and study and Thomas Aquinas and whatever it might be, right? The real theology is done in experience, right? In an encounter of the living God.
Yeah.
And it's the same in nature, in astronomy.
It's beautiful. Beautiful poem.
It kind of leads in, I don't know, is there more you want to say on that? Because that kind of leads into, I think, one of the other things I've been contemplating. But
No, that's great.
Okay. But yeah, it's just I think of like gazing at the stars. The way of beauty is something I've really been thinking about, and I guess it's connected to poetry.
That's good.
But I just have had, I don't know, Nick, so the past 2 weeks, for whatever reason, I've been getting home at the time right around sunset or right before sunset. And I have a really beautiful view of the sunset from my backyard. So I've started doing this thing where I get home, I see the sun start to set, and you know, there are times where this happens, you know, I'll just, it's pretty, go inside, go about my evening. But lately, I have been, when I notice that, I've been pausing. And I even have brought out a chair out and like put in my backyard just to watch the sunset during those times. And I've just been contemplating like that experience of just taking 5 minutes to watch the sunset and what exactly is going on in my heart in that experience. And it's kind of, it's this call, it's like it's something transcendent, but it's this like leading out of myself, like, you know, I'm going about my day, I'm going about the order of my day, and something strikes me, right? Something strikes me that calls me out of my routine. It's the sunset, and I have a choice in that moment to break my routine and pay attention to this beauty in front of me, or to ignore it and go about my day. And to me, it's been a real kind of analogy of grace, right? Right? How does grace work in our life? Well, grace, it tries to get our attention, right? It tries to call our attention to the Lord, ultimately. And we have a choice in that moment to acknowledge it and move on, to ignore it, or to pause and to rest in it. And so the sunsets have been that moment for me lately, is just to rest in that moment of transcendence, that moment of beauty that is just, in a way, separate from everything else that's going on in my day, but in a way, like, far more important than anything else that could be going on.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, we used to always do kind of every now and then, but this I've had this same group of girls that I coach for soccer. This is my fourth season with a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
I used to point out, because we'd be practicing a lot of times when the sun was setting. I used to kind of point out, whoa, look at the sunset or whatever. And it kind of became like a joking thing where like all the girls are turning around like, hey, wow, the sunset or whatever, you know. And but it actually became kind of a cool thing where we would all turn and recognize its beauty, you know, like in between practice drills or whatnot. Yeah. Gosh. So it kind of reminds me of that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so awesome that that you take the time for that. It's just, I don't know, the word transcendent keeps coming to mind because it's something about even outside of something I've contemplated in looking at sunsets too is there's something that happens. And I think for a theist, for a Christian, right? We often feel close to God in those moments, right? Because we know that he's the creator and he's behind that sunset. But I've pondered too, something happens for an atheist too in that sunset, right? And because atheists love beauty, right? They're drawn to it. They may not attribute it to God, but there's still something that happens, I think, in their soul, right, in that moment. And there's a transcendence, and I use the word transcendence because I think it just kind of goes beyond everything else we experience. Yeah. And I think even for an atheist, they would have to admit that, right, that the experience of beauty in that way, in a sunset, that's the example we're using here, it goes beyond everything else you do. It goes beyond your day-to-day experience.
Yeah. What does that mean? So I have it in my mind now that when you're experiencing a sunset, it kind of brings you in a space that's away from the life that you're living. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of what you mean? That's what I thought just now is whenever you're experiencing a sunset, it brings you you're going about your life, and then when you experience a sunset, it kind of brings you out of that for a second, so you can.
Here's the nuance that I'd make is that you're also more present to what's the reality in front of you.
Yeah.
So it goes beyond what you thought were your priorities, what your day, what your routine is like in that moment. It goes beyond that and outside draws you out of it, but in a way, it grounds you more in the reality that's in front of you, right? Because the reality that's in front of you is the world, right? Is the sunset that's going on in this place and time.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So it's simultaneously rooted in the present, but transcends that present moment as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a hard thing to get my head around, but I think I'm with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Beautiful.
Yeah, always worth contemplating the way of beauty.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Classic.
All right. What else has been on your mind?
So I think my latest thing, especially when it comes to my reading, is I've been getting into some Agatha Christie mystery novels lately.
Okay.
I think you said you've read a couple, right?
I've read Death on the Nile. I've read.
Oh, nice.
I've seen Murder on the Orient Express.
Okay.
I've read one or two others too. Yeah.
Okay.
It's been a while.
I told you Death on the Nile is going to be a movie next year, right?
Oh, good.
I tell you that.
That's awesome. I think I saw a preview for that a while back.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The Wonder Woman. Woman, what's her name? Gal Indo, I think. Yeah, she's going to be the main actress or whatever. Yeah, so it's going to be a big motion picture. So.
Right on.
Yeah, so I'm pretty excited about that. But yeah, I've been reading a couple of her novels lately. You know, I've always loved mysteries, and I think pretty much the entire world has too. One of my favorite things that I like to, I'm actually going to write my next More Than Entertained article on mysteries and Agatha Christie mystery novels. So that'll come out shortly.
Yeah, maybe we can link that in the show notes once it comes out.
But it'll come out on Monday. But
perfect.
Yeah, so that'd be a good kind of link there. But anyway, yeah, so I've been reading Sherlock Holmes kind of in my recent life too. So, but yeah, I just, you know how when you read a mystery novel or a whodunit or you watch a, whodunit or mystery movie, it's this magnetic addiction. There's no way I'm getting out of reading this. There's no way I'm getting out of watching this until it's done.
Yeah.
I have to see this mystery to a resolution. You know? It's it's like an addiction that we have zero control over. I love it. Honestly, the other night I was at, it was 10:30 at night. I'm trying to get to bed earlier. Mm-hmm. Is another thing. And I said, hey, I'm gonna get in bed at 10:30. And then it was around 10:30. I'm like, you know what? Whatever. I'll just read a few minutes of Agatha Christie. Yeah. I was up to like midnight reading that. You know what I mean? So yeah. That's what these mystery novels or stories have, like the effect they have on you.
Yeah.
I've just been thinking about like why that is. Yeah. Why are we so drawn to mysteries? Mm-hmm. Like why is the human race essentially drawn to these stories?
Right.
And kind of the resolution that I've come to is like, we're drawn to not the mystery, but the resolution of the mystery.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I'm glad you said that. Yeah.
Yeah, we're drawn to, like, we want to see these things that are unresolved come to a resolution. And I think that's so cool to think about in terms of our spiritual lives.
Yeah.
I don't know. Before I go to that, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I love that. I think there's a balance there, right? We're drawn to the mystery itself.
Yeah.
But then kind of, the climactic moment is when, you know, Hercule Poirot, is that how you say his name? Yeah. Comes out and says, I know.
It was
and
you.
Explains, yeah, right. It's like the dramatic moment of revelation, right? Yeah. Of revelation of the truth that was a mystery to us, this entire novel, right? And it's usually something unexpected, right? Which is, I think, important to it, right? Because we cannot fully grasp the truth on our own sometimes, right? And what we think it is sometimes wrong, right?
Yeah.
And so having that moment of revelation by the all-knowing detective, right, whether that's Sherlock or Hercule, I think it's, but it's the tension there of the mystery and the resolution that I think is a real part of our human experience.
Yeah, it's cool too, like just thinking about how you experience mystery stories too. So thinking about like when you come to when the story comes to a resolution, you find out like that aha moment. You're like, oh, that's incredible, awesome. But like after you find out, there's like that experience of, I miss being in the mystery.
Right.
Like I miss that middle portion where like I didn't know what was happening and I was looking forward to being, you know, like so I don't know if you've had the experience of like experiencing a mystery movie or novel twice and like, you know, reading it a second time or watching it a second time and it being not as good because you already know this is like what's going to happen at the end or that kind of thing. The mystery is gone.
Yeah. And that's in a way that's like life for us too, right? We don't have all the answers. We don't see the ending. Even if we know parts of it. Right.
Yeah.
And that's the joy and the mystery and the excitement of life is that we're living, we're in the midst of that movie that we're watching for the first time.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
And it spans the whole course of our life.
Yeah, and I was thinking about, too, about what heaven's going to be like in terms of mysteries, you know, and just thinking about how heaven is this place where we're kind of always having the excitement of the mystery. So there's like heaven is like this place where we're continually unraveling the mystery for for all of eternity, and we never lose the excitement of the mystery.
Right.
And it's always coming to a resolution.
It's not a rerun.
Right. So we're always experiencing the resolution of the mystery to the end of time. Wow. Which is just
that's beautiful.
It's unbelievable.
So you're basically saying that heaven is like watching Scooby-Doo
on repeat
and never knowing the ending.
It's like an ending that you're resolving eternally.
Right. Yeah.
They're totally constantly satisfying.
Pulling the bag over somebody's head and saying, and then he says, if it weren't for you and your meddling kids and your little dog too. That might be a little Wizard of Oz as well mixed in there. Yeah.
The resolution of the mystery prolonged for all of eternity.
Awesome.
Isn't it? I don't know. Does that make any sense?
No, I think it's wonderful. I just had to bring Scooby-Doo into it because we both love Scooby-Doo. But I think that's right. I think that's ultimately, it's hard to really describe heaven. I think that is a very good way of reflecting on heaven. Absolutely.
Yeah, it just relates to our longing to know Jesus fully, to know the mystery of the Trinity fully. Yeah. You know, and
so there's something very human about our love for mystery stories. Then.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's what I've been contemplating lately.
Dang, maybe I'll have to pick up some Agatha Christie.
Yeah, it's fun stuff. Yeah, I recommend, I just got done reading The Murder of Roger Ackroyd, which that was voted in 2013, if anyone cares, by the British Crime Writers Association. Who would have known that was a thing? But they voted it the best crime fiction novel of all time.
Oh, wow.
The Murder of Roger Ackroyd.
Yeah, better than Dostoevsky, like Crime and Punishment or Brothers Yeah, Today.
I would say that that's not really a crime, even though a crime definitely centers around both of those. It's not really about that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's not about the mystery.
Yeah, but anyway, yeah, so they voted the greatest
crime. Didn't you tell me that Agatha Christie, is it like the second... She's like the second best-selling author next to God or something?
Yep, so the top three best-selling authors of all time are God, because of the Bible, Shakespeare, and Agatha Christie.
Dang, she's number three.
She's number three.
Okay.
Yeah, wow. That's wild. If that tells you anything about human beings and our love of mystery. Yeah.
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 And Shakespeare and God.
That's right, yeah. Well, they're just on a... Well, obviously, God is higher up than Shakespeare, but you know what I mean. They're on a plane of their own, yeah.
Right, sure.
Yeah.
Dang, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, well, what is it, my turn or your turn?
It's I think I'm done, actually.
You're done. So, you've exhausted your mysteries.
Yeah, I think I'm done. I'm boring after that. But all right. So, you have anything else you want to discuss?
The last thing I have, so I listen to a ton of podcasts other than ours. I love podcasts. I love discovering new podcasts. I love learning through podcasts. Sometimes I'll go on drives or walks just to listen to podcasts. I love them. I learn really well through them. And one I discovered recently is kind of maybe a little out of my wheelhouse. But I discovered through the Matt Frad show, actually. He had a guy on named Matt Whitman, who some of our listeners may have heard this. But he's a Protestant. And he has an interesting story. He was a pastor for a little bit. He actually left Christianity for a brief time, became disillusioned, had some hard experiences where he just needed to step away and figure out his faith, and then came back, and now he's in ministry again, and he does this podcast called the 10-Minute Bible Hour, and in it, he's been doing this for a couple years now, and he does 10-minute podcasts on a passage, maybe eight verses from the Gospel of Matthew. He's literally spent I think 2 years on just the Gospel of Matthew.
Holy smokes.
And he's on the 21st chapter now. But he started with he did six episodes just kind of introduction and backgrounds to the Gospel of Matthew. I really enjoyed those because he got into the dating of the gospel and the authorship, which I love the questions surrounding the authorship of the Gospels, and I actually have come to similar conclusions that he did regarding authorship and dating of Matthew. But I've just found it really cool. It's there's a 10-minute podcast. I've never been into that short of podcasts before. There aren't a lot of 10-minute podcasts. And yeah, it's also, it's a Protestant podcast, and if I'm listening to theological podcasts, it tends to be more Catholic. But I really like the concept of just a 10-minute, something to listen to for 10 minutes, because you can binge it, you can listen to three or four of them in a row, you can listen to one on a short drive, you can just tune in at various different times throughout the day. So I've quite enjoyed it, and really looking forward to walking through the rest of the Gospel of Matthew with him. So anyway, it's called the 10-Minute Bible Hour by Matt Whitman.
So is it 10 minutes or is it an hour?
It's 10 minutes, but it's called the Bible Hour, so make of that what you want.
Okay.
It's a mystery, you might say.
Okay.
But they're about 10 minutes long.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Cool. Yeah, that sounds interesting.
Maybe we should do more 10-minute podcasts.
Maybe so, yeah. I was going to say, maybe we should quit talking now if we're supposed to do 10 minutes.
It's so hard. I don't know how you do that. It's so hard to talk for 10 minutes in just 10 minutes, you know?
I'm with you, yeah. No, good point. Yeah. Especially 10-minute, but never mind.
That's going to be a dumb joke. All right, any parting thoughts, Nick? This might be a shorter one in the spirit of the 10-minute Bible Hour.
No, that's fine, yeah. No, I think maybe just as a reminder at the end of our discussion here that, continue to engage in conversations like these. These are things that, I had a friend the other day that called me on the phone and asked, hey, any spiritual insights you've had lately or anything like that? And we had a great conversation. It wasn't very long, maybe 10, 15 minutes, but we had a great conversation. That was actually really, really meaningful to me personally, and I'm sure it was for him too. So yeah, continue to implement these things and talk about things that matter in your life.
Yeah, don't be afraid to have those conversations. I think that's one thing I value about our friendship and about this podcast is that we're able to have those conversations. I think there are people who don't, who just aren't talking about those things. And So yeah, bring it up. Ask your friends what they're contemplating, what they're praying about. Bring up what you're, if they're not super open about it, bring up what you've been contemplating.
Right.
Vulnerability breeds vulnerability. Yeah. So I think that's a great point.
Yeah. I found that's actually the best way to do it, is to like raise a question that you've been asking, you know, that kind of invites someone into your space, and you can go from there rather than asking them to share something that,
right,
you know, they may or may not have anything, you know, so, or may not be able to be comfortable sharing. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's something you do quite well as well.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, this has been a great time, a great conversation. Enjoyed catching up, talking about contemplating things and praying about things. For our listeners, we have a new survey that we'd love for you to take and give us some feedback. It should take you like 2 minutes tops, but they'll be in the show notes, so go check that out. Love to hear from you. Love to hear any ideas, thoughts, concerns, hate mail that you might have. As always, hate mail goes to Nick. And we're really grateful that you're sticking around and listening to us. Praise be Jesus Christ.
Now and forever.
Amen.